Well, happy 2024, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Financial 50. This is the podcast of financial advice that gives you what you need to know in 50 minutes or less. I'm your host, Ashley Nichols, and with me as always is co-host and senior wealth advisor, Stephen Biddle. Say hi, Stephen.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year.
It's been a wacky New Year. It was too cold and now it's too warm. You can't decide what it wants. Now, as you know, if you're an avid listener, we do record these episodes on a monthly basis, and you can find them all on our website. That's at www.biddlejohnstonwmteam.ca. Now, our podcasts are under the newsletters, podcasts, and videos tab. We cover a wide range of topics, from explaining tax-free savings accounts to tax planning, philanthropic giving, and even how to protect yourself in the digital age. We're always looking for new topics to cover, so if you have some burning financial questions, you can send any questions or comments on what we should cover next to ashley.nichols@nbpcd.com. So we spent a good chunk of 2023 exploring the world of financial planning and how we can all benefit from the advice of a professional. Today we're going to explore the wonderful world of insurance planning. Now, we have with us today Amanda McCloy. She's an estate and insurance advisor. Hey, Amanda, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Ashley. Thanks for having me on.
Now, before we get into our topics, do you think that you could give us a little bit of your background, how you got into the insurance side of banking, your likes, your dislikes, basically your whole life story in 20 seconds?
Excellent. So you want me to talk about my cat for 20 seconds?
Yes, please, if you could.
Excellent. Well, I'm from Waterloo, so for those of you who don't know, that means you really have two options coming out of school, and you can go into tech or insurance. And to give away a little bit of my age, I came out of school at the highlight of RIM / BlackBerry. Unfortunately or fortunately, they didn't hire me. I guess in the long term, that was a good thing. And so I kind of stumbled into insurance. But once I got there, I realized how important it was and that I actually wanted to make a career out of it. And so the way I look at insurance is that it's there to help families. And more specifically, it was there and it helped mine. I was actually a beneficiary of insurance at a fairly young age. And I had lost both my parents to cancer by the time that I was 22. So when I stumbled into insurance, I knew that this was going to be my passion and know firsthand just how it's there to make the hardest things you can have to go through in life just a little bit easier by removing the financial stress that goes along with it. It's really there to protect the ones you love against having to make sacrifices if bad things happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you say, it's, you know, you go through something so life-changing, so life-altering, and it's nice to know that there are things that can be put in place to make those, you know, life transitions much easier to handle. So yeah, that's a good thing. It's good to have you here. You found your calling.
Thank you.
All right. Now it's time to ask some questions and get some answers from Amanda. So we will let Stephen drive this conversation. And as always, if I have a little something, something to put in, I'll put in my 2 cents. But for now, take it away, Stephen.
Thanks, guys. I think because this is our first podcast on insurance, we'll take it, you know, kind of down to the very basic level at the beginning, right? We're not going to get into super duper concepts. We can always do that on future ones, but you know, let's start with the number one question. What are the reasons someone might want to consider getting insurance, and you know, what types of insurance would you kind of recommend?
Excellent. Thanks, Stephen. Well, there's a few different types of insurance out there, and I'm sure everyone knows about car insurance and home insurance that are really mandatory if you own a car or you own a home. Personally, big believer that life insurance and critical illness and disability should be mandatory as well. But maybe that's a little biased based on my personal experience as well as my career. So that really comes down to, and there are three main types of insurance that I work with. Part of that is life insurance, which I'm sure everyone is, you know, fairly familiar with. The second two are what's considered living benefits. And this was actually something I had no idea that existed until I started in the insurance industry. So the first one is critical illness, and that's there to provide you a lump sum of tax-free money if you get diagnosed with something really bad that's life-altering. Mm-hmm. So think your life-threatening cancer, heart attack, stroke. Actually, between my parents, they would have been able to claim 5 separate times on critical illness insurance. And have that injection of cash there. And critical illness insurance is actually one of the ones that we're more likely to claim on, along with disability insurance, which is there to replace your income if you can't go to work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then life insurance, obviously, Amanda, is there if/when someone passes away, right? That's the third
time. Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Okay. And there's a couple of different types of life insurance. So there's term insurance. That's really the temporary type of insurance. It's there to protect us in the short term, often at a much lower monthly rate or annual rate. And then there's also permanent insurance, which is always there with us and carries throughout our entire lifespan.
Okay, is there sort of, between those two, permanent and term, if someone's looking at it, is there, can you say, you know, you use term for this reason and you use permanent for this reason, or there isn't really sort of a do this for this?
Oh, there's lots of reasons. So we tend to look at term for temporary things as well. Often when we're younger, we want to look at term. So I always say there's kind of 2 stages of life when it comes to insurance. There's the stage when we're younger, we're growing assets, and we're protecting our family and our loved ones. And we're really protecting them against those sacrifices that you're making if bad things are happening. You know, we're protecting against the fact that if you lose the income of one spouse, that the mortgage is still able to be paid, the bills are being able to be paid on a monthly basis, the kids are still able to go to school. You're not forcing the spouse who's surviving to pick up multiple jobs just in order to keep roof over the head and food in the mouths of your family. Permanent insurance is something that we tend to look at when we get to the second stage of life, which is we've taken care of ourselves, our family's in a good position. We're probably more so moving towards that retirement phase and not as much in the growth anymore. And this is where it can come in to help protect us against taxes. Or provide a legacy for our children or grandchildren. And there's lots of fun tax planning that we can do, especially when it comes to clients that have corporations with permanent insurance.
Okay. And then I guess looking at term, traditionally, like I said, if I'm wrong on things, correct me, but term traditionally is much cheaper, right, than the other one, permanent insurance. Is that correct?
Exactly. So yeah. That's why term fits often when we're much younger and we're still in that protecting stage. We can get a whole whack of term insurance in order to cover that income. Typically, we look at somewhere between 10 to 20 years of income that we want to cover for our family, whereas permanent insurance is always going to be there for us. And as a result, the amount and the rates on that are quite a bit higher because they know that that will pay out at some point. Mm-hmm. With term insurance, you often have the ability to convert it into permanent insurance down the road. And so there's lots of little features in there that you can help that term insurance policy kind of grow with you and your family as you change into those different stages of life too.
Yeah. And when I said cheaper, one thing I forgot to mention is term, you know, it makes sense if you think about it. Term is cheaper when you're young because the probability of you passing away is smaller. But as you get older, term becomes very, very expensive, right? As you get closer and closer to the exit date.
Yeah, the expiry date.
Yes. Okay, that's great. And you did mention a minute ago mortgage insurance. What is that about? And is it a good deal? And
is it worth it? That's my question always. Is the mortgage insurance actually worth it?
Oh, it's such a hot topic in the insurance world. And I might get a little passionate here about it. So apologies in advance. So when I'm talking to clients, I always talk to them about the fact that the type of insurance that we work with here and that I work with is not the stuff you see in the news. So, for example, I know right off the top of my head that Manulife pays out 99.999949% of their life insurance claims. And I find that oftentimes in the news, we're seeing, you know, these horror stories of these insurance policies that weren't paid out. I know CBC Marketplace did a feature on it many years ago and on mortgage insurance. And really what mortgage insurance is it's creditor insurance. So you're not protecting your family. You're protecting the bank. Obviously, you know, we love the bank, but I don't love the bank enough to want them to get my insurance policy benefit.
Right.
So with mortgage insurance, there's a couple of downsides. One, the bank's your beneficiary. With traditional term insurance, you designate the beneficiaries and they get to decide what to do with those funds if you pass away. The second thing about mortgage insurance is that it's underwritten at the time of claim versus the time of issue. And so that's those stories that we see in the news. When something's underwritten at time of claim, they're looking to see, was there a reason we shouldn't have given you insurance in the first place? When the bad thing has already happened. With the term insurance and any of the insurance that we work with here, they're underwriting it when we apply for the policy. So they're taking a look at you medically, financially, and your lifestyle. So the fun things like mountain sports and, yeah, you know, your driving record, to see, is there a higher risk to the insurance company there? Mm-hmm. Are they able to offer you the insurance? Might they need to increase the rates a little bit because you've had some medical history or there's a higher risk to them there? Mm-hmm. So they're looking at that upfront, which allows them to pay out a large amount of their claims because they've already done that work upfront.
So
the
You lost me a little bit there. So you're saying if I have mortgage insurance and I take it out today, quote unquote, when I have a mortgage at the bank, and 3 years down the road, I have cancer and it's not good. You're saying if I pass away, then they say, well, the mortgage insurance doesn't count because I'm now sick. Is that what you mean? Like, I don't understand between the two. You're saying, I understand with term, they say, how are you doing? They look at you. Okay, you've got this problem, so there might be a different pricing. But I didn't quite understand when you were talking about mortgage insurance saying they do that when you claim. I don't understand what that meant.
Yeah, so what they do with mortgage insurance is they'll often have a little bit of a health questionnaire or declaration. And it's often a little bit ambiguous, you know, have you ever seen a doctor about this? Or have you ever consulted with somebody about this? And so it's a little ambiguous when we go through and we answer that. There's also a few exclusions that are on the policy as well that aren't in traditional term insurance. So if, you know, everything was answered truthfully on the application, there's no ambiguity there, and you passed away of cancer 3 years later, they'll probably pay out the claim. But what they do at that time is they go back to say, well, had you consulted with a doctor, could this have been something that you already knew about going into it? Is this something that's excluded from the policy for the way that you passed away? So there's a lot more ambiguity when you're looking at it there. Not to say they won't pay out the claim, but there's, you know, more of a chance for the insurance company to come back and win there.
Sorry, I do have a question with mortgage insurance. My husband and I have mortgage insurance, but it was because, of course, we couldn't put that 20%. Who can put 20% down on a house nowadays? And we couldn't. So we had to get that mortgage insurance. So in those cases, do you have to get it through your broker and the bank who provides you the mortgage? Or can you say, okay, I'll get the mortgage insurance, but I'm going to Amanda to go and draw up my policy, and provide you with that?
For sure. And most good brokers, they have to offer it to you. Mm. But most good mortgage brokers are going to say, you might want to go seek out actual term insurance on this.
Okay.
So they'll actually kind of give you that out. Now, there's two different types of insurance with that 20% down. So there's that CMHC insurance that we need, again, kind of protecting the bank, right? But then there's the life insurance there that if somebody passed away, that is there to pay it off.
Mm-hmm.
So they cover two different things. But for the mortgage insurance that we're talking about, it's the life or disability portion included that they have to offer you on that.
Okay.
And I just add on that as well, too. Often when I'm reviewing someone's mortgage insurance, the term insurance that we're actually able to offer here costs a lot less.
Really?
Oh, yeah, I was actually going to say, that. I've actually heard one of the most expensive life insurance policies you will ever buy is the mortgage insurance.
Really?
Yeah, and the rate doesn't change. And as you're paying down your mortgage, the balance is technically declining, right?
Yeah.
So let's say you start out with a $500,000 mortgage, and at the end of 2 years, maybe you've been really aggressive. You paid it down to $450,000 or $400,000. While your insurance is now only good for whatever is remaining on that, with the term insurance, if we had bought a $500,000 term insurance policy, we're going to lock in those rates for maybe 10 years, 20 years, or anything in between, really, depending on the insurance carrier. And those rates stay exactly the same, and so does the insurance benefit. So if there's a difference there, then that remainder is there for your beneficiaries, again, to use for whatever they want.
Wow.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Now, you mentioned a little bit that insurance companies usually pay quite a few of the claims. Now, what about for critical illness and disability? Disability, they never pay that out because, some of the things, it's like, if you can pick up a leaf at the floor, like that's your job, so you're getting paid out. Like, how does the disability work?
I have a great story on that. So when I began my career as a call center, and one of the people that I talked to at one point, they were actually a claims adjudicator. And they said the way that they used to go about it for disability claims, their trick, their investigative trick, was they would go and they'd put a case of beer on somebody's porch and ring the doorbell and then go film them and see if they came out and picked up the case of beer.
No.
Can't make this up. I was told that this was a thing. By one of the claims adjudicators. So whether they still do that, whether that's true, I don't know. But there's, again, two types of disability insurance as well. So oftentimes if we're an employee, we're employees here at BMO. So we have a group disability policy.
Yeah.
By the way, we should all meet later because I'll tell you all the reasons why you should have an individual disability policy as well. But with our group disability policies, there's often a lot of gaps in it. And so those gaps can be a few different things. Oftentimes there's exclusions in them. There can be, they call them non-evidence maximums. So maximum amount of insurance that you can get, especially for any high income earners, there's probably a gap in your coverage there. And kind of the last thing is what their definition of disability is.
Yeah.
So not true in all circumstances, but I'd say a good majority of the group plans that I review, their definition of disability is your occupation. So, Stephen, if you can't be an investment advisor after 2 years, in our case, it's actually one, after 2 years and you can do anything, so I generally call this the burger flipping clause, they're going to force you to go back to work.
Oh.
And if you can do anything that would earn you an income, you've now got to go back to work. Your disability claim stops.
So you're saying, I'm an investment advisor. And then you're saying, if for whatever happens, I can't speak anymore. We'll use that as an example because in our job, obviously, speaking is kind of important. So all of a sudden,
no,
I can't speak.
You? Speaking.
I know. People are like, whoa. But, if I can't speak anymore. There are lots of other jobs out there that you don't need to speak for, right? So you're saying, like, you know what? You can do X. I'm just thinking one off the top of my head, say garbage collection guy, right? Like you don't have to speak to them because you just, pick the garbage cans up, right? So you're saying I have to go do that job and I'm not getting paid out.
Exactly.
So, and let me interject.
But what about the difference? Sorry. Actually, what about the difference? If I'm making, $20 and the garbage guy makes $10, do they like give you a different amount or you just like forget it? No, you just get your $10, have a nice day.
Get your $10, have a nice day.
Wow.
Well, how's that a good plan? It kind of sounds like garbage.
Those are usually company offered ones is what you're saying.
Yeah, there's a lot of holes in our group benefits plans often.
Yeah.
There are some some decent ones out there, but 99% of the time, there are going to be holes in your group coverage, and a lot of us aren't aware of them. So what we can do is back that up with an individual disability plan. And what we typically have on individual disability plans is all the way right up to age 65.
Okay.
We say, if you can't do your job, so Stephen, you can't be that investment advisor, you're going to continue to get your disability claim until you can either go back to work as an investment advisor or until you're 65. They're never going to force you to go be the garbage collector.
Wow.
Okay. And that's
so I was going to say, sorry, Stephen, to cut you off. I just don't want to lose this. So my father, back when I was 15, had a really awful accident where he was working and has permanently disabled him. So no way he could go back to the job that he wanted to go back to. Knowing my parents, I'm almost 1,000% positive because now we get all of our – my dad gets all of his compensation through minimal disability payment plus workers' compensation. So I'm sure that they didn't have any outside disability policy, because what they did offer him was to say, well, you can come back and have a desk job. But my dad was, well, he was a workaholic. And so if he couldn't have the job that he had once had, which was very physical labor, he did not want to go back to work. So, of course, he never took it. So now they live on disability, very small disability payment, and workers' compensation. And that's how they've gotten by. He just turned 65 this year. So now he's switched over to his pension. But you never think it's going to happen to you until it happens to you. And then it is just it's the worst experience, and it can turn families upside down.
Yeah. And I guess that's, to use insurance terms, that's where you've got the any OC versus own OC, right? In other words, any occupation you can work versus your own occupation, right, Amanda?
Yeah.
That's where the bigger chunk comes in. Sorry to interrupt again. I guess when you're looking at your job set, that what you do, the more specialized your job is, the more important own OC is, right? Let's say you're a brain surgeon, right? There's a very specific skill set. Like you say, it literally, if you lost one of your fingers, maybe you could never be a brain surgeon. Well, you could literally do 99% of every other job that exists if you had one finger missing, right? So that would be a huge difference, right? You're a brain surgeon. Then, like I said, if you've got the company plan, and guess what? And there's no disrespect to garbage collectors. I'm just using it as an example. You're a garbage collector, and you could easily do that if you missed half a finger, right? So that's what you're saying. Oh, what a massive difference it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's actually a fun nerdy insurance fact here, is that on our group plans, we use the definitions a little bit differently. So on our group policy, they use the term own occupation, and that means I can't do my job. And then they switch it to that any occupation. So again, if you can go be a garbage collector, you got to go back to work. They often have those rehabilitative programs as well. So they will try and get you back to work doing something else if they can. With individual disability, the definitions are actually a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So what comes standard in those policies is what they call regular occupation, and that really means the same thing as what we think of in our group plans. They also have, of course, the any occupation, so some policies you can kind of change that a little bit to still have that any occupation kick in if you're looking to save a few dollars on a month on your plan. But then they have a third level, and this is really for our surgeons or somebody in that really specialized occupation. And what it says, if you can't go be that brain surgeon, but you can do something else, so for example, go back and teach, a lot of our really high-end professionals are surgeons, people who are working with their hands, where something like that may actually come into play, is you can still keep claiming on your disability policy. They're still going to keep paying you, and you can go collect your income from teaching, and they don't reduce your disability payment for that.
Oh, wow.
They don't reduce it. So it's not like you're making the $100 as a surgeon and then teaching is 50. They don't say, okay, we're just going to pay you the 50 to top up. You're saying you can get both.
Exactly. So that's, again, for really specialized occupations that comes into play. But standardly, we normally have that quote-unquote regular occupation on most of our disability plans that says, hey, I can't be an insurance advisor anymore. And they're never going to force me to go do something else. But if I chose to go do something else, then my payment would be reduced.
Right. Okay. Right.
And then the other one that fits into that little bucket there is, you talked about a little bit, the critical illness. How does that kind of work?
So critical illness is personally my favorite type of insurance. And again, this is, you know, probably biased based on my own personal experience. But what that does is that's there to pay you a lump sum of money if you're diagnosed with something really, really bad. So this is going to be something that's going to impact your life. Generally, some of the top claims there are life-threatening cancers, heart attacks, stroke, think things like bypass surgery. So things that are pretty major. There's most carriers have somewhere between 24 to 25 different conditions that they cover.
Wow.
As well, they have a subset of conditions that they cover under what they kind of call an early intervention benefit or an early benefit that will pay you out a lower percentage. But those are for things that might knock you off your feet for, call it, a week or two. One of the ones that's covered under that benefit, which is normally somewhere between 10 to 25% of what your total amount that you're covered for, is angioplasty. So angioplasty is literally you go into the hospital, they put a little catheter through your veins, you're in and out within a couple of hours, and you're back home and probably back to work by the end of the week.
Yeah.
So that's something that would be there to pay you out that little bit of a kick because you've had something kind of major change in your health. Now you've got a few extra dollars, whether you need to take some time off work, whether you want to take that and enjoy it and maybe go on a family vacation, or what I'm seeing a lot more now, especially in the high net worth client space, is to go seek private medical treatment somewhere.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that might not be available here or approved here in Canada yet that may be available either down in the US or down in Mexico. So we do see a lot of clients go and seek that treatment and use the funds that the insurance company has provided them. And it could just be to, you know, keep the lights on at home, pay the mortgage, pay the bills, pay for parking at the hospital. I think I heard somewhere recently it gone up to like $40 a day.
It's ridiculous at the hospital. Like the U of A, I can't even. And do you know what actually really got me was for the longest time, and with my dad in his accident, like my mom lived at the University of Alberta Hospital for 2 years. Like it was just in and out every single day. Luckily, her parking got covered. We always thought that the parking goes towards the hospital and the maintaining of the parking lot, but also the maintaining of the hospital. And no, it's just a private company that takes all that money. And I'm like, well, now I'm just, I'm going to walk. If I get my leg cut off, I'm going to park in a residential area and I'm going to hobble to the hospital.
Well, you know, speaking of the parking thing, this is just a little tip. When you do it, see if they have a weekly plan. Like recently my dad was in hospital and my sister was visiting him quite a bit. And at the very, you know, of course, after 5 days, she goes, seriously, I could have like a weekly plan for, let's just call it, you know, $100 when she's paying like $40 a day, right? So just look for those.
Oh, Lord.
What we'll look at now, we're kind of getting closer to our time. But last one is, what does the process look like for getting insurance? Like, you know, is it different for different policies or kind of, can you tell us what it's like?
Yeah, excellent. So the process has really changed. Insurance, super antiquated processes. And one of the good things to come out of the past few years for insurance anyways was COVID. So the way it used to look, and if you go back long enough, actually as the advisor, we used to have to go out and like swap your mouth with cotton swabs and send it into the insurance company.
Wow.
I'm talking like 30 years ago on this, but the process has really changed over the past few years. You know, even 5 years ago, a lot of times we'd take a 40-page novel out to you as an application to ask you all the questions and fill it in and send it to the insurance company. Most of the times now, if any way possible, I'm doing electronic application with you. What then happens is that there is generally a health and lifestyle interview that's done with either directly with the insurance company or with a company called DynaCare. And what they do is they take care of all the medical requirements. So they'll call you, they'll do that in-depth health and lifestyle interview. For most clients, depending on the amount of insurance that you're getting, that may be the only thing you need. Even 5 years ago, if you're applying for, call it $100,000 worth of insurance and you were under the age of 50, they would have also sent a nurse out to come poke you with a needle and make you pee in a jar to take your blood and urine and assess that. One of the cool things about technology and data analytics is they found out that in most cases, it wasn't actually changing the decision that the insurance company was underwriting. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I'll throw it out to the two of you. If you're age 40 and applying for $5 million worth of insurance, what do you think the requirements would be to get that?
Just going from my own experience, when I tried to get some lending products covered with some life insurance, again, through the bank. So this was only back when I was in my early 20s. All I got was just the lifestyle and the health questions. So I got denied, but I was denied strictly because of my parents' terrible health conditions that are all genetic health conditions. So my assumption is that, you go through the questions. We're talking just 5 years ago?
Yeah, 25 years ago, if you wanted to apply for $5 million worth of insurance, what do you think you would have needed?
I would assume, you have to do the questionnaire, and I mean, I don't know, you're saying someone's got to come out, so maybe someone will come out and check to make sure you're telling the truth, maybe, but I don't know. What do you think, Stephen?
Well, I've had insurance a while ago, so I remember doing it, and then the guy came out to the house, took the blood test. I think they had to do a urine test, right, all the questionnaires. That was what I had to do. I wasn't doing five.
Turn your head and cough test?
No, not that one. we weren't that friendly. Yes. So.
The cool news is now is that even depending on the insurance company, not everybody is quite there yet. But if you're under the age of 50, the likelihood of you just needing to do that health and lifestyle questionnaire is pretty high. Mm-hmm. What they'll often need in that case, too, are things that we as the insurance advisor can help you get. One being a motor vehicle report. We have a form we sign. We'll go down to the MVR or the, what do they call it?
The DMV.
for you and grab that. And they'll write to your doctor. You don't have to have that nurse come over and do the testing anymore. So the requirements to get the insurance in place have actually changed substantially. So we do that process depending on how much you're applying for, how old you are, and your health history. Potentially your family history as well, too, may change what those requirements are. Mm-hmm. Once the application gets submitted, the questions answered, and any of those requirements are done, the insurance company, and they call it their underwriter, reviews it from a medical perspective. So are you healthy? Were there some genetic predispositions that you might be, subject to? Is your lifestyle good? Do you have 20 speeding tickets? Now, I want to clarify this because in Alberta, we have photo radar. What does not show up on your MVR? Photo radar, because they don't know if you were actually the one driving the car. Do not disclose photo radar tickets in Alberta. If you do, we're too far gone. Anyways, things like I had to learn what high marking was when I moved here.
Oh.
That's apparently where you race up to the top of the mountain in a snowmobile and race down. Insurance companies don't like that one.
Oh, I'm going to try that. I'm
going to
try that one.
And they also look at it from a financial perspective as well. So I can't just say, I'm going to go buy a $20 million policy on Steven's life because, I think he might be a little stressed out. I think his expiry date might be coming up. And I'm going to buy $20 million on Steven because I think I could win on this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't do that because, one, I have no insurable interest in him.
Right.
So there's no loss to me financially if something were to happen with Stephen. And as well, too, that amount would be considered unreasonable. So they look at things like your income and your assets that you have to determine if the amount that you're applying for is reasonable as well.
Okay. So in that application process, we talk about like predisposition, like genetic diseases, things like that that run in the family. Are there certain things that after a certain amount of time might drop off? So let's say we know mental health has become to the forefront of so many people's lives and people have become much more open about it. So let's say somebody who may was not in a great mental state, let's say about 5 years ago, maybe there was a suicide attempt. Would things like that wreck your chances of insurance? And if they do in the immediate future, what about the long-term future? What about 10 years down the road and now you're in a very good place and have not had anything like that happen in a decade? Would that still affect your insurable outcome, I guess?
I guess the answer is potentially, right? So the insurance company certainly is concerned with things that have happened in the recent past. So, you know, unfortunately, if there was a suicide attempt within the past 5 years, there's a good chance that they either may not be able to offer on the insurance or they may need to increase the rates on it.
Okay.
If it was something that had happened many, many, many years before, 10, 15, 20, and they can see that you've been very stable since then, so you've been going to therapy, you've been taking medications, you do yoga, you meditate,
mm-hmm.
and these things are all really actually important when the underwriter is looking at that and reviewing the file. So one of the things I always like to do is when we know that we've had a health issue in the past, whether it's mental health, whether it's something else, is that we actually do what we call a cover letter. And that's my chance to introduce my client to the insurance company and tell the full story. Because that health and lifestyle interview is pretty black and white. They ask you the questions. They're not really looking for the story behind it.
Yeah.
A big one to kind of highlight on that is diabetes. So fun insurance nerdy fact is that actually clients now that are type 2 diabetic that are really managing their condition quite well
mm-hmm.
may actually have a longer life expectancy than somebody who doesn't. Because if they're managing it very well, they've now taken all these different steps and leading a really healthy lifestyle.
Yeah.
So they're working out, they're exercising, they're eating right. And so those factors are actually starting to play into the decisions a lot more.
Okay. Oh, interesting. So that being said, I mean, I know one of the next little questions, we'll see if we can wrap it up. We got about 10 minutes left because we know Stephen will have to hop off here, but for health of 5 minutes, he's given me the 5 minute warning for health concerns. So like we were kind of saying, Amanda, so any health concerns that you can have, can you still get insurance when you do have health concerns?
Potentially. So for example, diabetes, a lot of the times that's still insurable.
Okay.
You might have to pay a little bit more. So the rates might increase, but the way to kind of look at that, you know, maybe not ideally in your mind as a client, but unfortunately, you know, your risk of claiming is a little bit more.
Okay.
And so when I look at that and see the clients that have that, they call it a rating applied to them, well, we might not like that, but the reality is that you need that insurance a little bit more than the really healthy person beside you.
Yeah.
One thing I'll just highlight on here, too, is that we've kind of got a new insurance that entered the marketplace a few years ago. Manulife offers an insurance called Vitality, and what it does is it's really a wellness program wrapped into the insurance. So think of like Geico, where they put that monitor in your car to see how you're driving.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing everyday healthy lifestyle activities, so, you know, working out, eating healthy, doing preventative health checks every year, they reward you by giving you discounts on your cost of insurance, as well as some fun stuff along the way, like an Apple Watch and discounts to gyms and, HelloFresh, that kind of stuff. So it's a kind of neat way that the insurance companies are starting to think forward, because they know that these changes that we can make in our lifestyle will actually help improve it.
Yeah.
So for clients who might be experiencing some health issues, maybe this is a little bit of a motivation, and it gives them a little bit of control too, to help control what they're paying on their policy as well. So something kind of cool.
Well, I like too that they reward you with fun little things along the way, because it takes me back to this one Chris Rock comedy special I once watched where he talks about insurance, and he's like, insurance is there in case it happens. So he's like, but when that stuff doesn't happen, shouldn't I get my money back? Like, this is like, why can't I get my money back? So you don't get it until you die, when you finally kick the bucket, right? Or something terrible happens. So yeah, I think that's really interesting that they're starting to put more of that stuff in place. That's awesome. That's good. Well, I think we have unfortunately run out of time, and I know that we have probably a lot more that we can cover. And we're hoping to maybe have you back, Amanda, next month for our next episode, which would be excellent. It's interesting to learn that insurance goes so much further than just accidents in your car and fires in your house, which is really interesting. What I would like to see is, you know, last year we were talking about the financial planning with Sean Harding. I would love to get the two of you, all of us together in the same room, and start talking about how insurance can really fit into your wealth plan and planning into your retirement and your future. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to have you guys here together in the room, maybe talking in the next episode or two. So, and we hope everybody listening will join us for that.
For sure. I always say you get insurance because you love someone. Something, so, you know, think causes, charities, mm-hmm. animals, whatever, or you hate the CRA. And yes. Sean and I are going to be able to teach you how, if you hate the CRA, insurance is a beautiful tool to make sure that more money goes to your family, less money goes to the CRA.
Oh my gosh, we'll make sure that'll be the title of that episode. We'll get so many listeners. Hate the CRA? Listen to this. Well, thanks so much, Amanda, again, for joining us. This was absolutely awesome. I think we definitely got a good foot in the door. That's all I'm going to call it at the moment, is our foot in the door regarding insurance. So we will definitely have to have you on again next month so that we can chat a little bit more. Now, again, for anybody who's listening, if there are any questions about today's episode, I know insurance is this huge, encapsulating, with many different avenues and lots of questions. If you have any questions about today's episode or any previous episodes, we are more than happy to answer. Now, our email to reach out to, again, is ashley.nichols@nbpcd.com. You can also go to our website, and that's www.biddlejohnstonwmteam.ca to listen to all of our past episodes. Our contact information is also there. Well, thank you again, Amanda, for joining us. This was absolutely awesome. And thank you for everybody for tuning in to another episode of the Financial 50. And we hope that everyone has a great day, and we will definitely chat with you all next time. Say goodbye, Stephen.
Goodbye. But, hey, that was great, Amanda. We will do it again because, like you said, we just scratched the surface. And this is such a tiny, like as Ashley said, foot in the door. Like, I think it's more like the big toe. That's it, right? There's so many different things in there. And so, like you said, even with that CRA thing, you know, I'll just put a little sweetener out there. How about buying insurance where your favorite charity gets the money and CRA gets nothing? We'll leave that as a little bit of a tidbit.
Love it.
I love it. All right. Well, everyone have a great day. And thanks again, guys. And we will chat again soon.